Well, Heather Morris is an Australian writer and social work administrator, and for several years while working in a large public hospital in Melbourne, not Melbourne, she studied and wrote screenplays, one of which was optioned by an Academy Award-winning screenwriter in the United States. In 2003, Heather was introduced to an elderly man who might just have a story worth telling, someone told her. Well, the day she met Lali Sokolov changed both their lives as their friendship grew and he embarked on a journey of self-scrutiny, entrusting the innermost details of his life during the Holocaust. The Tattooist of Auschwitz.com is a website you want to check out. And Heather, I mean, I need to start this interview off by saying, how did a Kiwi-turned-Australian screenwriter meet an Austro-Hungarian-born Slovak-Australian Holocaust survivor?
Because when a friend of hers asked her to have a cup of coffee with her one day, she said yes. And it was while having that cup of coffee that said friend casually said to her, "Oh, by the way, I have a friend whose mother has just died, and his father has asked him to find somebody to tell a story to. That person can't be Jewish." My friend was Jewish. She knew I wasn't. She said, "Do you want to meet him?" And I said, "Yes."
So you meet for a cuppa, as they say. And yep. And did you have a couple of bickies with that as well?
Absolutely. Lully, every time we sat down, he made the worst coffee imaginable. he never once actually asked me how I liked my coffee. It just got presented to me. And there would be a plate, and it would have these wafer biscuits. I'm not sure if you know what wafer biscuits are.
Sure do.
But they were ones that he would show me proudly the package because they were imported from Israel.
Oh, man. I can just imagine. Look, I lived in Australia for 5 years. I was up in the Blue Mountains, and I wasn't a big fan of sort of how much instant coffee came, you know, went around the country. And I can just imagine sitting down with this elderly gentleman having to sort of sip on this cup of sludge, you know?
Absolutely. Lukewarm at that.
Brutal. All right, so Lully, he kept his story quiet for 60 years, and as I understand it, there was a good reason for that.
Well, there were two reasons, actually. The first one was Gita did not want to talk about their time. She never spoke about their time in the camp except to Lully. And so she being a closed book, he would not want his story to be known publicly because automatically it was going to rebound on her. And the second reason was he had that nagging fear that just out there somebody might point the finger at him and accuse him of being a collaborator because of the role he had in Auschwitz-Birkenau.
I've heard that answer, and I just keep thinking about it. And, you know, look, as an outsider, a complete outsider, I have no pony in this race whatsoever. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, me neither. That's one thing he got really, really wrong. Because nobody in all the countries I have visited and the places I've spoken to, from the London Synagogue to the British War Museum, nobody even hints at that. And so he got that wrong. But you've got to understand that the man and Gita, they had, you know, a degree of survivor guilt, possibly Gita more than Lully.
Sure.
But as long as that threat or the potential for it was there, he was never going to allow Gita to be subjected to any criticism or any kind of talk behind her back that her husband may have been a collaborator. So it was a total protection thing for Gita.
Well, of course, Lully became the protege of the current tattooist in Auschwitz after Lully was saved. Now, if I get this right, was this man that was the current tattooist, did he take part in saving Lully after he was sort of thrown on a pile of corpses because he had typhoid? I mean, that just sounds so perfect for a screenwriter to come across.
Oh, absolutely. I can't believe I ended up with this story that not only sort of sounded like Hollywood, has a Hollywood ending, and I don't mind giving the ending away. It's a happy ending, folks.
Yes.
But yes, Pepin helped one of the other young men, the prisoners in Lully's block, to take his unconscious body off the death cart and carry him back into the block and helped him look after him during the day while the men in the block were out working. Because he, being the tattooist or the tatovera at the time, he had the freedom of movement to help out. And it was he who took him outside as he recovered into the sunshine and sat him down and had a little chat.
I mean, just unbelievable. The way this story unfolds, as we've already said, is a screenwriter's dream. But it makes me wonder about some sort of divine, maybe intervention or divine plan. Now, of course, when you contrast that to how many people were horrifically terminated and executed and tortured, then that makes you go the other way and say, really, there's a divine plan? This is ridiculous, right? So I wonder, I mean, did you and Lali have any spiritual conversations? Did you talk about his Jewish background or his faith at all? Or did he, if it was me, I would have been looking skywards and saying, really, we're your people and millions of us are dying. What are you doing, God? Are you having a nap?
Pretty much. He had that conversation looking upwards many times, as opposed to Gita, who her faith was as strong the day she left the place as it was when she entered. Lali's wasn't. Has waxed and waned.
Sure.
And we talked about that many times. In terms of his survival, all too often he would want to tell me that he was just lucky, lucky, lucky. And he and a lot of other survivors who I've met and spoken to, they all put their element of luck into their surviving. Mm-hmm. And then they will have different degrees of their own faith, how it played a part in them also surviving. So it was a combination with them. They never, ever, none of them took out that aspect of luck.
No, and I think that's quite common within the Jewish faith, especially these days, and especially with that older generation. I had a lady from Auschwitz, a survivor, obviously, on my show, I think it was last year, and she mentioned that word time and time again, luck, luck, yeah. Luck. I wonder what encounters did Lali have with the most feared man of Auschwitz, Joseph Mengele?
Too many to recount, and you only have one fraction of what I know about his time with Mengele in the book. There was too much horror, too much weeping, and poor Lali, whenever he spoke about that man, and it took probably a good 6 or 7 months before he would even mention his name to me. The first time I mentioned it, and I said, what can you tell me about Mengele? He just froze and started shaking, and his eyes started moistening, and I knew then to back out and just wait for him to be ready to talk to me about him. And it took many months. And every time he did, he spoke with a quivering voice and was shaking hands and shaking his head, and he'd look down and go, evil, evil man. Mm. Yes, and what he told me, what he witnessed and what he saw being carried on in that hospital in particular, it wasn't worth putting in the book, because no good can come of me repeating what we know that gentleman was doing there.
No, I think the first word was more correct, yes, more accurate. But the one scenario that I think I remember coming across is that Lali's assistant was taken away, and everyone feared he would never come back, he would be killed, but he did come back.
Well, yeah, so many people just disappeared. Pepin just disappeared, the original Tatavera. Yes, Leon came back, and he'd been subjected to some of those experiments over in Auschwitz. Got to remember that Lali was in Birkenau, 4 kilometers away from the main camp most of the time. Leon was castrated for his troubles. That was the experiment carried out on him.
See,
that's quite common, that the castration of the men in particular was carried out there quite a lot.
Well, Lali, of course, shared extra rations, altered prisoners' tattoos to keep them from the gas chamber, and helped sort of doomed men pull off daredevil escapes. I wonder if you could just share one of these stories. Obviously, in an interview like this, we don't want to give the whole book away, but...
Well, why don't I give you a story that's not in the book?
Oh, brilliant. Thank you.
And it's not in the book because I never had a second piece of evidence corroborating it. And everything that is in the book, I had to get at least one piece of written evidence, and we had professional researchers finding us those documents, or I had other testimonies to confirm it. Now, there was one story which Lali was so angry that I wasn't putting in my screenplay, because he read drafts of it. And why aren't you telling about Mordovitch? Why don't you tell them that story, he'd say to me. And I say, Lally, I can't find that corroborating evidence of it. Mm. Now, this gentleman, his name is surname is Mordovich. He and three other men are known as the writers of a document called the Auschwitz Protocol. This is a document that was smuggled out of Slovakia by the four men who had escaped from Birkenau. They wrote what was going on in that place. Escaped, got to Slovakia, wrote this document, smuggled it to Switzerland. It got smuggled out to both Washington and London. And this is about June 1944. At that time, 10,000 Jewish people were being transported from Hungary to Auschwitz per day. They've all been rounded up and they're all in Budapest. The president in Washington in the White House, he found out about what was going on. He got hold of this document and he contacted the president in Hungary. And he said, you stop that now. Those deportations stop this day. And fearful, the president in Hungary, and we've got all the proof of this, he stopped the deportations and 170,000 Hungarian Jews never went to Auschwitz.
Wow.
Now, where Lally comes in, that one of those four men who escaped, Mordovich, he had actually escaped a few weeks earlier and been recaptured. He got brought back to Birkenau and he was to be publicly hung. That was the punishment for escaping or even attempting to escape. But you weren't hung straight away. They would wait a week or 2 weeks whenever they could get themselves an audience, so to speak. It had to be done publicly when a lot of the prisoners were not working. So Mordovich knew that that was to be his sentence. And he came to Lally and he asked him for help. What can you do to help me? I know you've been helping other people. Now, what Lally did to him was to change his tattooed number into a rose. He totally took away the numbers and made this flower. And then with this group of other men, they arranged for Mordovich and another man to escape again. And they did that by moving piles of timber that were in the camp to be building more of these blocks for prisoners to stay in. They moved it to the side of the fence. They created a hollow in the middle of it. And Mordovich and another man called Ernst hid in that hollow for 3 days. Now, Lally and some of the other prisoners managed to get hold of some petrol and they poured it around that cave, that hidey that they had, so that whenever the dogs went past, they couldn't smell the prisoners hiding in there. And it wasn't until the end of the war when Lally met up with Mordovich again that he learnt that they, in fact, had hid there for 3 days. Waiting for the heat to die down, knowing that the SS had worked out they had escaped. Now, they escaped because Lally helped him, and he changed his tattooed number to a rose so that he wasn't immediately being picked up by the SS in the camp. 170,000 Hungarian Jewish people didn't go to Auschwitz because Mordovich escaped and wrote that document.
Wow. Come on.
Yeah. I found out about this because a fellow countryman of yours actually contacted me about 2 months ago. And he's in Toronto. He's a journalist in Toronto. And he said, I've heard about your book. I'm writing a belated obituary for Mordovich. Hmm. And he said, I've been doing my research on him. He said, my man talks about your man. Did your man talk about my man? I went, hell yeah. So he sent me this gentleman's testimony and interviews that he had done where he talks about Lally.
So hold on. So is that your corroboration then now?
There's my corroboration. I have Mordovich's testimony and I have a photo of Mordovich holding his arm out, showing his tattooed rose.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I bet you wish that was in the book.
Gee. Of course I do, but I had to be so strict on what I did put in that I couldn't be open to any kind of exaggeration or claims of embellishment or not telling the truth. So, which is why you only have 10 to 20% of what I actually know.
No, and I get that because, look, I have sort of a skeptical brain. I have the spiritual gift of pessimism. And yep. I recently interviewed the woman who wrote Becoming Mrs. Lewis, a work of fiction about the real wife of C.S. Lewis. And, mm-hmm. and you know, here you've written this work of fiction, a novel about the real tattooist of Auschwitz and his wife. And yep. a part of my brain in both these interviews sort of goes towards, but how do you know? Because I know that people embellish. I mean, we live in the world of Jerry Springer, where people just... Yes. They want to have their story. They want their 15 minutes of fame. And they kind of, you know, and as humans, we all remember things with a little bit more embellishment. And so I'm thrilled that you're sharing about the research, the fact-finding missions yes. that have gone into this book.
Oh, utterly. I mean, yes, as I say, I wasn't going to write anything that I couldn't back up. And we have got some amazing documents from Germany and Poland. Well, there was a tremendous attempt made to destroy them all. They didn't destroy them all. They exist. And I have documents with Lully's name and his number on showing the role he had in the camp. The document that details the day that he was arrested and taken to the penal unit in Auschwitz and kept there and beaten for 6 weeks. I actually have those handwritten SS documents.
Sure, because, I mean, at the beginning, Heather, you're sitting there with an elderly gentleman who's rattling on and you know, serving you tea and bickies, probably a couple of Tim Tams every once in a while, and you're thinking, well, this is interesting. This is, but he's an elderly man, and maybe he's not recalling things properly. And then, my goodness, can you imagine that first document that you find, and everything fits together, and you say to yourself, "Wow, this is real.
This is real. What have I got?" Huh. It's called Sitting with Living History.
Incredible, incredible stuff. This love story of Lully and Gita. I mean, Lully says he tattooed her arm and she tattooed his heart, but they were together and then apart and then together and then apart. And how did prisoners 32407 and 34902 end up being together for the rest of their lives? How do you concisely, I mean, it's a beautiful story, and that's of course what we're talking about in this book, The Tattooist of Auschwitz. But what's the highlight reel?
That this playboy, this man about town, who he was a love him and leave him kind of guy before he got taken into Auschwitz, played hard, loved hard. And for him to then hold the arm of an 18-year-old girl dressed in rags and a head shaven and unbathed, look into her eyes and tell me 60 years later, "I knew in that second I would never love another." It's just amazing to know his backstory of who he was and then have that happen to him just by seeing this girl with his eyes. He called them black, but they're the darkest, darkest brown. And yes, I can see how they would have just drilled straight into him. And yeah, he was gone for all money at that point.
Gone for all money. I love it. But hold on. They were together, and then tell us about every time they were separated and then how they found each other. So they were separated the first time when? How?
Well, the first time they were separated for any period of time, well, they got separated many times when Lully would not be able to see her because he would just be too busy. And you realize that catching stolen moments in a death camp, you're not going to happen every day at the end of the working hour. And he would be not see her for weeks on end if he was working particularly over in Auschwitz. But then in January 1945, as things started going badly for the Germans, Gita was sent out on a death march. The date was the 17th of January. And on that death march, she had to make the decision, carry on or run and just risk that bullet in the back that she saw happening to so many other girls who ran. She and three other young Polish girls, they chose to run. And I can tell her story because Gita made a show of foundation tape. She did record her own testimony for Steven Spielberg's Show of Foundation. And so I have had the privilege of seeing a copy of that.
Wow.
And I can tell what happened to her because she relays that. And so for 6 weeks, in the middle of winter in Poland, hiding in the forest, being hidden occasionally in the warmth of a home and being fed by the generous Polish people who reached out and helped them as best they could, before she could get her way back to Slovakia. And yes, that's where I get my Hollywood ending, with Lully getting back there eventually and just knowing she wasn't dead. He knew that she had to be alive. He would have felt it, he said, and he used to clutch his chest. She wasn't, I would know it. I would feel it. And so while he went looking for her, she actually found him. She saw him riding towards her, stepped out in front of the horse.
Come on.
I know. He had this little cart that only one person could stand on, and this horse-drawn cart. And, yeah, she's her and her friends, she said, walking down, and one of the friends said, look at that funny man and that funny little cart and with the horse. And he just said, and I looked up, and it was Lully.
Isn't it funny that a funny little man was a man about town? I just think that's funny.
Yep.
Well, okay, because Lully obviously died before this book was published. Now, I know he went through the screenplay that you had put together, but the book is a different thing. I guess you'll have to guess at the answer for this question, but what part of the book do you think he would read and his face would go red?
Look, it would not be the scene where they are intimate. Though, when I first gave him a draft of the screenplay, here's a little humorous story for you. I gave it to him on one of his birthdays, and here it is, all bound up. Here's your screenplay. And he's reading it, and he's flicking through the pages and seeing his and Geeta's name on page after page, and he's just beaming. And his son, in his mid-40s, is sitting on the other side of the table to the two of us, having coffee and cake. And Gary reached over and he said, give me a look, give me a look. And he snatched it out of his father's hand and he started going through it. And at one point he turned to me and he said, oh, Heather, there's a scene in here you have to take out. I can't have anything in my father's story that's not true. And I went, okay, sure, show me the scene. And if it's not true, well, it's gone.
Yeah.
He showed me the scene. I started reading it. I turned around and showed it to Lully and he started reading it. And his head went down and down and down. And I went, Lully, is that true? And he shook his head, yes. I said, Lully, do you want me to take that scene out? And he shook his head, no. And at that point, his son stood up and smacked his poor dad over the head. And he said, how could you? How could you sleep with my mother before you were married?
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, so good.
And he looked at him and he went, you had to be there.
Oh, man. Come on. This is just gold. Gold.
What scene would he, you know, it's probably the scene that wouldn't embarrass him, but the one that made him very, very emotional when he read it and when he told me, was the scene about the Roma people that he lived with, the gypsies. Hmm. That just would absolutely reduce him to a quivering mess when he spoke about them. And that was one part of his time in Auschwitz that Geeta didn't get. And if anything, they had little fights about. How could he be so upset and so traumatized by the death of a race and a culture that wasn't theirs? You know, over a million Jewish people died in that camp. 4,500 gypsy people got taken out on one night. But Lully had lived with them. They had families, children, grandparents, babies. And he was so traumatized by that. As he said to me, you know what? It doesn't matter what your race you are, what religion you are, what color you are, where you come from. You all bleed the same color red when you get shot.
Yeah, so true. Is Gary the only son?
Yes, he is.
So his reaction to the book, have you heard from him?
Oh, yeah. Look, absolutely chuffed. Doesn't know which way to look. Here's his parents' story now. If we want to quote Lord Geoffrey Archer, we're still being read in 100 years' time. So, yeah, absolutely delighted.
No, I believe you said chuffed. And for our North American listeners... Yeah. Means delighted. Okay.
Delighted.
Well, listen, I'm so thrilled to have you on my show. I'm so thrilled to speak with you. I'm so thrilled that you you wrote this story. I really am, because I'm not a huge fiction reader. But when I hear stories like this, first of all, I'm a love story junkie, number one. Number two, something said in the time of Auschwitz, when love prevails, I mean, come on. So thank you, because this is what our world needs more and more and more of. The tattooistofauschwitz.com is the website. And of course, Heather Morris is the author. What an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Heather.
Oh, thank you, Drew. Look, just delighted with your interest and delighted to be talking with you.
Wow, Heather is a dynamic person. I mean, can you imagine as a screenwriter, I was going to say screenplay writer, as a screenwriter, having that story dropped in your lap? You would just be, like, she will be, forever be known as the lady behind the Tattooist of Auschwitz, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's going to be a movie for sure.
Yo, for sure. And, you know, but there's two sides to that, though. Yeah, like, what an incredible story to have. But I think there's the other side is, like, I better tell this right. So I think there is, you know, the joy of getting something so amazing like that story.
Yeah.
But I would be afraid to mess it up.
Well, I think she said, the son of the tattooist was chuffed.
Chuffed.
With the story.
Let's use that for the rest of the show.
Tim, how are you feeling today?
Just chuffed. Except for my arm.
Which is different for chafed.
Yes. I wouldn't feel chuffed if I was chafed.
Oh, my goodness. All right, listen, we can make something so great turn so horrible in such a short period of time. We are so skilled and gifted.
We're gifted, yes.
That was our HarperCollins Canada Presents moment. Heather Morris, author of The Tattooist of Auschwitz, and, of course, the website is thetattooistofauschwitz.com.